I'm Matthew Smith, Vermont Edition producer, and I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Connor Cyrus. Governor Phil Scott delivered his budget address on Tuesday. It's dense, it's complicated, and it's more than $7.5 billion. But today we're going to try to simplify things and really help you understand what it means and how it will impact you. To help break down how the governor wants to spend that budget and what it says about his priorities, we have a roundtable of political reporters this hour. I first welcome political reporter Devin Bates from Local 2244. Devin, welcome.
Hey, good to be here.
VPR senior political reporter Bob Kinzel. Bob, welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Connor.
And VT Digger legislative reporter Sarah Mierhoff. Sarah, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Now, for starters, the budget address is where Governor Scott gives his wish list for how he wants to spend Vermont's money. This year, the governor proposed a $7.7 billion budget. That's obviously a massive amount of money, and that includes $12 million in child care financial assistance, more than $71 million for roads and bridges, more than $200 million on climate initiatives and community resiliency, and the governor wants to give $45 million back to Vermont property taxpayers as a rebate. Now, we're going to get to all of those and break down those numbers and really try to simplify it, but first, I want to go around and just get first impressions. Devin, let's start with you. What are your thoughts after hearing the governor and his budget address?
I think, Connor, one of the things that stood out the most to me as I listened to this was how he is approaching the issue of housing. We heard a particular focus on the lack of available homes for middle-income families. Governor Scott, in these addresses, will typically give some statistics to really diagnose the problem and where we're at. Something that was striking to me was the fact that he said there were 126 homes available across the state for middle-income families right now, and only five of them, or 136, excuse me, and only five in Chittenden County. And so he's pitching a couple different initiatives to try and address that stock, $15 million to build the homes. The question remains whether any amount of home building is going to solve this issue in the near future. Certainly something that housing experts have had their doubts about.
Yes, and we're going to get to housing in just a little bit. Sarah, let's get your thoughts. What were your thoughts after hearing the governor's budget address?
I think what struck me the most was how it connected back to his State of the State address, where he said that his major focus for this legislative session was workforce, workforce, workforce. Everything in the budget address he really linked back to this is how this is going to help Vermonters get back to work. So childcare, housing, of course, initiatives for people to move into the state from out of state, education, training. It really had this thesis, this crux of workforce development.
And Bob, finally, were there any surprises for you? And can you talk about the mood of the legislature and Montpelier going into this particular budget address?
Sure. I think the mood is different for maybe two different reasons. One, it's still a largely remote session because of COVID. House committees are back this week, but the House floor action is all being done on a remote basis. The Senate is remote. And, you know, I think it does have an impact on the legislative process. There's a difference between having 180 people, lawmakers in that building in the State House and operating over Zoom. But maybe the big mood is there is so much money available, both federal and state funds. You know, you look at the federal ARPA money and the stimulus funds. We have hundreds of millions of dollars for affordable housing, workforce development, climate change, sewer and water treatment plants expanding, broadband. I mean, it's staggering how much money, Connor, is being considered by the legislature in federal funds. And then on top of that, we have a surplus of Vermont funds. The general fund has a surplus of roughly $200 million because of very strong growth in the state income tax. The education fund has a surplus of almost $100 million due to very large growth in the state sales tax, because what we've seen is that during the pandemic, many people have shifted their buying habits from service-oriented purchases over to goods. And there are all sorts of proposals for tax cuts to spend some of this surplus money. But I think Senate President Pro Tem Becca Ballant said it best. She said, basically, this is a year where our disagreements will come over how to spend a lot of money as opposed to disagreements over how to cut spending. And I think it creates a very different atmosphere.
Bob, you talked about this being a ton of money, $7.7 billion. Is this the largest budget in Vermont history?
Oh, I think unquestionably it is. We have never seen an influx of federal money to this degree. When you think back on all the different types of money that Vermont has gotten since the beginning of the pandemic, we've gotten about $10 billion. So the general fund budget is about $2 billion. As you mentioned, the overall budget, that being education, transportation, and the general fund, closer to $7.5 billion. But we've never seen an influx of money like this, and it just creates all sorts of opportunities.
Now, Devin, having so much money, again, $7.7 billion, does this mean Democrats were listening closely to what the governor had to say, or was this an address where pretty much everyone's going to be happy with the outcome?
Well, after the address, I spoke with House Speaker Jill Krawinski and Senate President Pro Tem Becca Ballant, and right off the bat, they said it was refreshing to hear a budget address that was about these various investments and not cuts. But as it's been mentioned, I think how that relief funding is dispersed is going to be a big topic of conversation throughout the year. Pro Tem Ballant mentioned that she had a little bit of concern that there were these sort of smaller buckets of money going to various different initiatives and sort of spreading it across the board. And one of the things she brought up was the conversations that her and House Speaker Krawinski had with 1,400 Vermonters across the state. And it made them really want to ensure this is being distributed in an equitable way. So I think there's excitement that there's so much money that can go out to all these different issues. But you are going to continue to see I think those disagreements in these various areas, whether it's housing or the workforce, on how that's spent. But the one area there is agreement is that this is a pivotal moment and could be incredibly transformative.
Now, Sarah, one of the more glaring aspects that were left out of the governor's address was pension reforms. Was this something that surprised you, seeing as how there seems to be an agreement among the legislature and the unions?
You know, I'm not going to pretend to be the greatest pension expert, frankly. But to answer your question, yes, I was surprised by that, especially given the developments that we've had very recently on coming to an agreement on pensions. I can't read the governor's mind as to why that wasn't a highlight of his address, though.
Bob, what are your thoughts when it comes to why you think the governor did not mention or have a big impact on pension reforms?
Well, I think in all fairness to the administration, there was a deal cut between lawmakers and the state employees union and the teachers union. And it was presented to the administration for a vote right after the administration first had a chance to look at it. Now, this is a huge and very complicated issue. You're talking about, you know, a $5 billion shortfall in liability in these pension funds. And so they had to find a way to get more state money into those funds and also have some obligation for the state employees and the teachers. You know, I think at the time of that vote, DFR Commissioner Mike Pichek said, "Hey, I'm voting for this, but this is the first time I've seen this, but I'm going to vote for it to advance it." And this is really one of those cases where the details are really, really important. So I don't think the governor is quite ready to sign off on this deal, although I can't imagine that they're going to make very big changes.
Devin, was there anything left out of this, anything else or any other big aspects that were left out of the governor's address that you noticed that you maybe wanted to hear, or you were surprised you didn't hear?
Well, one thing that I think I was struck by, and it's something that the leaders of both chambers mentioned as well, is that the pandemic itself really wasn't mentioned all that much here. Now, of course, we're talking about a lot of funding that Vermont received during this pandemic that'll be going to these various initiatives that have been worsened by it. But as far as COVID itself, I think there was a sense that maybe There could have been a little bit more discussion about that. Perhaps it's just the nature of a budget address. You're looking from, you know, foot view on issues like this. But the pandemic, I was surprised it wasn't discussed a little bit more. But overall, I think we see sort of a sweeping focus on all these various issues. Mental health, I think, maybe was discussed towards the back end as far as some of these mobile response units that have been piloted in Rutland that will now be going to four different communities with some extra funding. But COVID and mental health seem like they have dominated the conversation, obviously, for the past 2 years, and perhaps not so much in the budget address.
Now, we've heard a lot about workforce development. Let's listen and try to understand why Governor Scott thinks it should be a focus of our budget.
Since February 2020, we've lost 24,000 people from our workforce. That 24,000 is larger than the population of every city and town in Vermont other than Burlington. It's bigger than some counties. It's greater than the populations of Williamstown, Johnson, Highgate, Heartland, Pownall, Underhill, and Hyde Park combined.
Now, Sarah, when you hear that, what goes through your mind as a reporter, and what are you hearing from people in the community about that?
I think there's a range of reasons why there are issues with workforce development, right? There are some of these very longstanding issues. For example, if we take healthcare workers specifically, Governor Scott, Senator Sanders, and State Senator Ballant had a press conference recently talking about a nursing shortage. And they said then that this nursing shortage far predates the pandemic. And there's a host of reasons for that. And so that's a big focus for workforce development. So that's one issue. There's also, of course, the pandemic itself. Childcare during the pandemic, people can't send their kids to daycare in many cases. And a lot of people, particularly women, has affected to a greater degree, have had to drop out of the workforce in order to take care of their children. And then, sadly, also some people have died. So that's generally what goes through my head.
And Devin, what are your thoughts when you hear about workforce development? Do you think what the governor's doing is a good job in highlighting this particular issue?
Yeah, and I think along with what you just heard him say there, as far as the population of lost workers being more than any city besides Burlington, he went on to say that it's also more workers than the construction and lodging sectors put together, and also nearly 7% of the jobs that were in the Vermont economy pre-pandemic. So, yeah, you are going to feel a hit from that many workers leaving the workforce. It's obvious. But hearing it laid out like that, I think, was really striking for a lot of people. And we also saw Governor Scott trying to find the balance between talking about bringing Vermont workers back into the workforce, whoever is not in the workforce currently, and then also what he called a less popular discussion, which is bringing out-of-state workers into Vermont.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Alex in Montpelier. Alex, you are on Vermont Edition. What's your question or comment for the panel?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question has to do, it's related to the whole mental health treatment, but it's really more focused on alcohol and drug treatment. I've been very concerned with the overwhelming desire to set Vermont up for all these great opportunities, but there's an enormous backlog in terms of treatment, both treatment centers, professionals to help with alcohol and drug treatment in this state in particular. You have very good programs in New Hampshire and Maine and other New England states, but I believe that now would be a very good time to at least play catch up and provide additional programs and services and treatment for people here in Vermont who are desperate, who have nowhere to turn. I'll take my answer off air. Thank you.
And Bob, you know, obviously before the pandemic, I think there was a big push for these types of services when it comes to drug and alcohol prevention. Any plans that you are seeing or hearing about in Montpelier when it comes to investing more money into this?
Absolutely. I think Alex really hit it right on the head. You know, I think the pandemic, Connor, has made the availability of alcohol and drug treatment programs even worse. And it's been difficult for people to get into programs. It's been difficult to have programs where people can get together. And I think the governor has highlighted mental health workers as a very important component of the workforce going forward. And we're going to see efforts for loan repayment for college tuition. We're going to see things like income tax credits for mental health workers. So I think the administration sees this is an absolutely critical component of their overall healthcare strategy.
And as we're talking about in this section, we're talking about workforce development specifically in the governor's press conference or the governor's budget address. The governor wants to pump a lot of money into training people to join the workforce and have a livable wage. Let's hear some of the ways he wants to do this.
I'll add $1 million to the state's internship program, assisting employers with wages and supporting workers who are learning new skills for a future career. We'll add another $1 million to VSAC's advancement grants, which help adults enroll in training programs without the expense of a college degree.
Now, in addition to that, the governor wants to add $15 million to keep more nurses, $18 million to existing funds to train, retain, and recruit healthcare and mental health workers, $10 million to reduce education costs for the trades. Now, Sarah, do you think this is enough to maintain and keep Vermonters?
Well, it is a lot of money. I think when you're looking at these issues, they, like I said before, they predate the pandemic, but of course the pandemic only exacerbated them further. And so Vermont is in the unique situation right now where it's so flush with cash because of all of the money that's poured in from the federal government. And the balance that lawmakers are trying to strike here is taking advantage of this one-time money, but of course, keeping in mind that it is one-time. And so you can't necessarily budget ongoing expenditures that would happen year after year when it's one-time money, because the one-time money will indeed dry out. So it's a matter of where can we get the most bang for our buck with a single time investment.
I want to go to the phones and talk to Catherine in Barnett. Catherine, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Yes, thank you. I know there's lots of money given to Vermont right now, and I didn't hear all of Governor Scott's address, but I hope somewhere in there he provided for some kind of long-term investment with some of these funds. I know there's lots of people who will hand out wanting money, which is great. I think it's neat that he might give us a rebate, but I would like to hope that he's investing something with this money. That's it.
Catherine, you're in luck because I have three reporters who listened to the governor's address. So let's go to Devin. Devin, did the governor mention anything about saving money?
Well, I think throughout this speech, we saw it was really focused on just making these investments. I know one area that he was hoping to save people some money was what he had originally pitched as a progressive tax release package, almost tax relief package, almost nearly $50 million. And so I think that was one of the things that we really heard early on that he was trying to highlight in this address. And it's something that we got a little bit more details on in this address. So it's things like that, exempting military families' retirement income from state taxes, building on some of the progress that he had made earlier in 2018 that I think was interesting to hear about. But it really was just kind of these investments in a lot of different areas and saving not quite as much of a focus as we had heard in previous addresses.
We got an email from Pete from Plymouth, and he says, a new high school costs $100 million. The budget is a lot of money, but things cost a lot more now, and there's a lot of need. Sarah, when we talk about this $7.7 billion, and we talk about it being a historic amount, is it really enough to help Vermonters?
I just want to circle back really quickly to the question about saving
yes.
money in this budget. Scott, this is frankly not the sexiest thing as part of a state budget, but he did propose setting cash aside for capital projects. So typically those sorts of projects would be paid through a bonding or borrowing mechanism, and the state would ultimately have to pay interest on that borrowed money. His exact quote was, we can also reduce our dependency on borrowing by setting up a fund to pay cash for certain capital projects instead of putting it on the public's credit card. So I did want to just note that to answer the caller's question. As far as this being enough money, you can always have more money. That would be
isn't,
nice.
Isn't that the truth?
I sure would like more money. But, you know, this is, like we talked about earlier, probably the largest, you know, one-year budget that Vermont has been blessed with in recent memory. And so the fighting comes with how do we best spend that.
It appears that workforce development is Governor Phil Scott's biggest priority with this budget. But we also know that the housing crisis impacts every aspect of attracting and maintaining young people to Vermont. Governor Scott says, even with all that we've invested over the last 5 years, we are still not building enough. And he wants to focus more on middle and low income housing.
Right now, the supply of modestly priced homes for sale is practically non-existent. As of December, the median home price was more than $369,000. As of last week, according to the Vermont Association of Realtors, there were only 136 homes for sale in Vermont that a middle-income family can afford, and only five in Chittenden County.
Now, Devin, you talked about this earlier, but I just want to add some more numbers to what the governor said. He wants to give $25 million to VIP, or Vermont Housing Incentive Program, $105 million for affordable mixed-income housing, and $15 million to encourage the construction of homes for middle-income Vermonters. Devin, we talked about this earlier, but I really want to dive into this now. What does this mean?
Well, I think it was interesting to hear such a focus on middle-income housing, but overall, I think what it means is that it's throwing the kitchen sink at the issue of housing, and I'm sort of hoping something sticks, because at this point, when you look at some of the numbers he outlined, there's questions on what it's going to take to really be able to make a dent in this. And that's something that's been echoed by other officials. I heard from Gus Selig, the executive director of the Vermont Housing and Conservation Board. They will have brought 1,100 new apartments online across the state by the end of next year. And he said housing is being produced at a rate that's much, much faster than had been the case in the previous 7 years, but we could double the rate of production for the next decade and we're still not going to catch up. So it's less of a question of, you know, how much money is going to each thing. It's at the end of the day, will all of this be able to make the impactful difference that Vermont so desperately needs, whether you're talking about low-income housing, middle-income housing. It is all sparse right now.
Bob, when you hear this, does this help for, like, is this reality? Because we know that this isn't a new issue in Vermont, the housing crisis. We've talked about this for years and years and years. Does this money begin to make a dent in the crisis that we are facing right now?
I think the answer is definitely yes, but what we have to also realize is you can't build a house in a day. It takes a while to build all these affordable houses. You have to have the right construction season. You have to have the right construction workers, and the governor has talked about that. So this is not going to be flipping the switch and having this change overnight. It's going to be a multi-year process. And, you know, one thing, Connor, that I was thinking about, we've been talking about workforce development as sort of the overarching umbrella of the governor's speech and how that affects things like affordable housing and childcare and tax burden. It's really a demographic crisis that is happening in the state of Vermont. By 2030, the general population of Vermont is expected to go up about 2%. People over 65, that group of Vermonters is going to increase by 50%. Now, just think about the implications of that. 25% of the state's entire population in 2030 is going to be over 65. Sarah mentioned earlier healthcare workers, a shortage there. We're going to see a third of nurses, nurse practitioners, doctors, a third of our healthcare workforce is going to retire in the next 5 years. A third of all our teachers are going to retire in the next 5 years. And where are the replacement workers going to come from? And, you know, it's sort of a tough issue to identify as a crisis because it's been a very gradual but steady decline. And the real question that the governor raised in his budget speech is there going to be, if we don't solve this problem, if we don't attract more young families and young workers to the state, which means addressing things like affordable housing and childcare, if we don't do that, we are not going to have enough revenue from a declining workforce to support the essential programs of state government unless we raise taxes, and nobody wants to do that. So there's a demographic crisis taking place out there in Vermont, and it touches just about every issue that we've been talking about.
Let's go to Robert in Burlington. Robert, welcome to Vermont Edition. What's your question or comment for the panel?
Hi, thank you for having me. I am a nurse here in Burlington, Vermont. I'm about 26 years old. And workforce development is a really big issue, in my opinion. And I think one of the biggest things that we can do to increase our nursing workforce is to create better conditions for our nurses and allied healthcare professionals. And one of the ways that I think we can do that is to create a better livable wage for those workers. And I think that one of the things that threatens the current workforce is the retention of our young nurses and even older nurses. And a lot of nurses are leaving the state, and including myself, to work at other hospitals outside of the state, just outer lying, whether that's taking travel contract jobs or per diem jobs where we can at least make a better hourly wage for ourselves. And one of the things that I think will directly improve nurse retention, at least here in the state of Vermont, and make working as a nurse in Vermont an attractive thing is going to be an increased or at least competitive salary. And I know that is a complicated front at the moment, but it is, I think it's, as opposed to saturating the workforce with many different workers, which I also think is a
Robert,
good
idea. I think we got it. I just want to mention that my colleague Michaela Lafrac, my co-host, she did do a show on the nursing shortage earlier this week. And Sarah, you've been doing a lot of reporting on this. What are your thoughts, and what are you hearing?
Robert, first of all, I just want to say I'm sorry to hear your experience with your working conditions. I have family in healthcare, and it is not an easy field ever, let alone right now. As far as the question of nursing salaries go, it's a great point, and you bring up travel nursing. Vermont is spending a ton of money, or Vermont hospitals, I should say, are spending a ton of money on traveling nurses because, frankly, it is an easy sell for a nurse working, and they see they can make three times as much, four times as much an hour if they become a travel nurse. And then there's, of course, the issue of morale in Vermont hospitals. If you're working beside travel nurses who are doing the same job as you, and I don't say this to knock travel nurses, this is just reality. If two nurses, one a permanent staffer, one a travel nurse, are working side by side doing the same job, and one person is making a lot more an hour, that affects the morale of the staffer. And it's not surprising that we have this issue.
One of the things Governor Scott said during his press conference was the state doesn't need more taxes, it needs more taxpayers. And one of the proposals Scott made during his opening remarks was talking about the budget. When talking about the budget, was more tax breaks and not raising taxes. Here's some of what he had to say about his tax relief package that he calls progressive.
The $50 million progressive tax relief package I propose includes exempting military families' retirement income from state taxes, something nearly every other state already does in some way. This package will build on the progress we made in 2018 by exempting more retirees from income tax on their Social Security and further increase the earned income tax credit, helping low-income workers.
Now, Bob, let's start with you. The governor used the word progressive, which is not something we hear him say, especially when it comes to finances and budgets. He tends to always lean on his Republicanism. What's progressive about this tax plan for Scott?
I think, Connor, progressive is in the eyes of the beholder. I think from his point of view, he would say it's progressive that he's trying to expand child tax credits and the earned income tax credit to programs that would help working families in Vermont. He's also talking about loan repayment and tax credits for nurses and mental health workers. You know, it's interesting. His whole package is about $50 million, as he just mentioned. There's a plan over in the House Ways and Means Committee that is $50 million for one program. And I think what the fight at the State House is going to be is that there's generally agreement that the state can afford to enact a tax cut this year. The question is, what kind of tax cut is it going to be, and who should benefit the most from this tax cut? We see the governor talking about people who are retired. That would be the military pensions, not taxing Social Security payments. Over in the House Ways and Means Committee, they're going to say young families with children are the people who need the most tax assistance right now, and their child tax credit bill would essentially give $100 a month to every family that has a child six and under. So that's $1,200 a year for each child. And that approach has a lot of support. And the chairperson of that committee, Janet Ansel, says, hey, if the goal is to attract young working families to the state of Vermont, let's give them a huge tax credit that they can work off of and make their lives a little more affordable. So I think this is actually going to be a tension point between lawmakers and the governor. Yes, there's money for a tax cut, but who should be the beneficiary of that tax cut?
Devin, one of the things that the governor proposed, and he's proposed this, I think, almost every year of his term, since he's been governor, is the military income exemption. Why do you think where is it that the legislature and the governor can't agree on this?
Well, I know this is something that last legislative session caused a bit of a stir. And I frankly am not entirely sure why there has been disagreement on this between the legislature and the governor's office. But we'll see, you know, as Bob had mentioned, with some of the tax relief package and what's going on in the House versus what the governor is proposing, if they'll be able to solve that. But it seems like perhaps we could see something get done with that on this year. I know Vermont is one of a few states that has yet to do that.
And listeners, we want to hear from you, 1-800-639-2211. What are your thoughts when it comes to the budget, when it comes to this tax relief plan? Do you agree with the governor that when he calls it progressive? Let us know, 1-800-639-2211. Let's head to the phones and go to Rochester, where we have Trevor. Trevor, welcome to Vermont Edition. What's your question or comment for the panel?
I actually have two comments. One of them is with the consolidation of the school systems and these empty schools sitting there. Like we used to have a high school in Rochester, Vermont. Now it's sitting empty. Why are these buildings not being utilized for mental health or housing or some sort of better resource? The other comment is I was a home care provider for 10 years plus, and is why don't they unionize? There is no job security because they are subcontractors. That doesn't seem to be fair.
Sarah, let's go. Thanks for your call. Sarah, let's go to you. How do you respond to that?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know why vacant buildings wouldn't be used for that purpose. That is probably a good question to forward to your state legislator. They can probably help out with that, especially if it's a Rochester area school. And as to your second question as to why the workers wouldn't unionize, I'm sorry, I also don't have an answer for
it's
you
a,
there.
It's a lot, but I'm wondering, are these, I guess the better question that I should have asked you is, are these questions that are being talked about in terms of, like, you're asking and reporting when it comes to these types of issues?
You know, I haven't heard these two specific issues come up in the State House this session yet. It just has not been the chatter that I have heard. But I think the home care provider question, that's a very good point, because Vermont does have an aging population, and a lot of people are going to need some form of care if they don't already. And a lot of people like at home care, they want to stay in their homes with dignity, and you need the workforce for that. And as we're talking about these workforce crises, and we have the caller talk about working conditions for nurses, I'm sure it's also a huge concern, working conditions and fair wages for at-home workers.
Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Deb in Burlington. Deb, welcome to Vermont Edition. What's your question or comment for the panel?
Hi, thanks. I just was really disappointed in the governor's address where he talks about the workforce issues and we need more people to move here. Certainly we do. There's a severe workforce issue. But there was an excellent article or commentary by Glenn McRae in Vermont Digger last week that was called "The Workforce of the Future May Already Be Here." And the point he makes, which I couldn't agree with more, is that older Vermonters have so much to contribute to this state. And the governor kind of writes them off as a pariah. You know, we're getting too old. We're getting too old. People are working into their 70s and are very vital members of the economy. I mean, the governor himself is pushing 64 in a little less than a year. He's going to be, or a little over a year, he's going to be 65, and he will be one of the, quote, problem people. And is he planning at that point to say, oh, I can no longer do anything? Is he ready to step down because he's too old? I mean, he's so that's my comment, I guess. I'm just.
Thanks for Deb. I think we got it. Thanks so much for your call. We also have an email from Trudy. She says, or they say, I'm particularly surprised there was no mention from the governor of money going toward food insecurity in Vermont. Last summer, I went to a number of food give outs myself and waited for over an hour, only to find that they had ran out of food. This happened more than once. I'm a senior citizen on Social Security, and food insecurity is important to me. Trudy, thanks so much for your email. We've talked about some of the key takeaways from the budget address already: tax relief, workforce development, the housing crisis. He also talked about the environment and investing in clean energy. Let's take a listen.
I propose a $216 million package to address climate change and community resiliency. We'll invest in things that reduce emissions and make our communities stronger, like EV infrastructure and incentives, weatherization, hazard mitigation, and system upgrades to ensure we can better manage and store our clean energy.
We also got an email from Hannah. They ask, I strongly believe we need to put even more money into preparing for a mitigated climate change. There are several climate justice bills in this session. What do your panelists think? Will things actually get the funding that's needed? Let's start with Bob. Bob, how are we all with how are we doing with climate change, and will climate change get the funding that it needs?
Well, the governor and the lawmakers have a slightly different point of view on this issue. There, first of all, I should say there's a lot of agreement. The governor wants to allocate a lot of money towards the weatherization of homes to be able to weatherize tens of thousands of homes. And home heating and building heating accounts for about 30%, I believe, of our carbon footprint. So the idea of putting more money into weatherization, more money into heat pumps, everyone's going to think that's a great idea. Also addressing the transportation sector, The governor is talking about state subsidies for electric vehicles. They want to add maybe 100,000 electric vehicles in Vermont over the next 5 years. That's a very tall order, and it can only happen with state subsidies for these vehicles and also a big investment in thousands of charging stations across the state and figuring out ways that renters can take advantage of charging stations. So there's lots of agreement there. I would say, you know, there's $150 million of agreement. Yes, let's put the money in those programs. Now, the disagreement is going to come over, and this is something the governor mentioned in his speech. There was just one line he said, we can do all these climate change initiatives without mandates. And that's where the legislature is going to weigh in. Do they want to put mandates in place to require the major fossil fuel companies to purchase carbon offsets if they're going to sell their products in the state? And the governor in the past has been very strongly opposed to that approach. He thinks by making the companies do that, that they're going to simply raise their prices and that consumers will suffer as a result. It is a very important issue to many lawmakers who see the governor's climate change initiative as a very good first start, but not the kind of depth that is needed, and that things need to be put into place to discourage carbon use. So this is going to be fascinating to see how far legislative leaders are willing to push on this issue, knowing there's a veto around the corner.
We do want to continue on climate change, but we do have a lot of calls, so we're going to try to get to as many of those as we can before this hour runs out. Let's go to Deborah in South Burlington. Deborah, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Well, what's your question or comment for the panel?
Well, the comment is I am a retiree here in South Burlington. I worked all my life as a teacher. They've been taxing my Social Security. And now we've got gentrification. We've just been reappraised. Everything is going up. And I'm just hoping that people realize that there are people who are poor retirees and really don't need a tax on the tax we've already paid.
Deborah, I want to ask, how would a tax relief or how would getting rid of that tax impact you personally?
Well, I mean, taxes are going up anyway, so I am at that threshold where I would get into another tax bracket, and so I have to be very careful not to make any money or go work, and that's when we get it. Is, you know, I'm afraid to get into the workforce. I'm almost 80, but I think I'm going to have to go back to work teaching. Of course, I don't think I'll have any trouble getting a job, but I am older, and I worry about being able to make ends meet, and if I get really ill, I need as much money as I can save to stay in my home.
Deborah, I'm so sorry, and I hope everything works out for you. Thanks for your call. Let's go to George in Waterbury. George, welcome to Vermont Edition. What's your question or comment for the panel?
Yes, good afternoon. Kind of dovetailed to the last lady's comment. In my opinion, the apex of the problem we have, and everybody talks about affordability, it reverses way back to even affordable housing. You know, typically people would invest money in affordable housing so that they can have an investment realized. But the problem is that the tax, property tax in the state, where every single building in this state is applicable to property tax, at 60, and that's nearly 80% of your property tax is going to the school fund. Governor Scott mentioned $1.5 billion to do what we do. It's not sustainable, and that is the hierarchy of why the affordability factor in this state is so unachievable.
Bob, what are your thoughts on that when you hear about property taxes, Social Security tax, and what's happening in the state?
You know, I think Deborah's comment is felt by a lot of people who have retired in Vermont. They can't understand why on earth the state is taxing Social Security benefits, because it's kind of a tax on top of a tax. And to make matters worse, Connor, it's estimated that between 45 and 50% of all Vermonters who are retired rely solely on their Social Security for their income. They do not have other pensions to rely on. And when you think about that, to then tax those Social Security benefits on top of what's going on, I think strikes a lot of people as being very unfair. And the legislature has gradually addressed this issue. There's a very complicated formula for determining Social Security taxation. And I think the lawmakers will look at this again because what it means to Vermont's aging population.
And we are running out of time, so I just want to keep this short. Devin, we'll start with you. What are your final thoughts in terms of where we go next?
Well, I think it's going to be interesting to watch how the budget discussion plays out in the legislature. I think I want to just sort of highlight how Governor Scott closed out this speech, and we talked about it in the beginning, which is he really feels that this is a make or break moment for the state of Vermont on how this money gets invested. So I would just close out by echoing what he said, which is Vermont's economic future is in our hands, and it'll be exciting to see how that plays out.
That's political reporter Devin Bates from Local 2244. Devin, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
And Sarah, what are your kind of closing thoughts to what we can expect coming forward?
I think there's a really interesting dynamic in the state house where you do have a Republican governor. I'm so sorry if you heard that. That's my cat being crazy in the background.
We just have a few seconds left.
But despite there being a difference in partisanship, there's still a lot of agreement, and it's just the devil's in the details where they have to strike the balance.
That's political reporter Sarah Meerhoff from VT Digger. And Bob Kinzel, I'm going to say goodbye to you now. Bob, VPR political reporter Bob Kinzel, thank you for being here.
My pleasure. And I would just say, Connor, that we are at a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to solve this demographic crisis. And from the governor's point of view, it's now or never.
Thank you, Bob.